Hello world, welcome to the Pocket Gamer podcast with your hosts, me, Brian Baglow, and the ever effervescent and strangely still at our desk, Peggy Ann Sulz. Hello Peggy, it's lovely to see you.
Yeah, it's lovely to be here actually, Brian, still at my desk. That's a description I hope to keep for a couple of weeks, but looking as if it will, there will be travels, but yeah, here we are. Here we are. Not quite the first half of the year behind us. And my bet is 2024 will be remembered as the year of alternatives. What do you think about that one, Brian?
I think you're absolutely bang on, Peggy. Everything is changing. The one constant, as we hear pretty much every single time we record, the one constant in the games world is change. And this year we're seeing more change than I think anyone is comfortable with. So we've got consolidation, we've got closures, we've got redundancies, we've got, you know, new devices, new business models, and we're going to touch on business models
exactly.
This morning. It's kind of the quintessential games year, or year in games, I should say, but not necessarily a comfortable one.
To your point, yes, alternative app stores, we'll be touching upon that because I have some shows lined up, some guests to talk about that. Alternative monetization models, of course, also big because it's all about maximizing revenue potential for your studio. And some are doing it by just sort of mixing it together. So we'll hear a lot more about hybrid monetization, but also a lot more about subscription, right? And that's where we're going to take it today. We're going to talk about where do you get started? How do you integrate it? How do you make it part of the journey? And when you've cleared those hurdles, right, how do you scale? So luckily, our guest has 20 years of experience in the gaming and digital industries, and he's leveraging that as CEO and co-founder of Multiscription, which is all about subscription. So Theis Mikkelsen, welcome to Pocket Gamer. And I would say we're lucky to have you as well. As I said, you have street cred. But speaking of luck, I couldn't resist it. You're also boosting your good luck with hagstones. So tell us about that. What is a hagstone? What's all this about? What's the good luck here?
Thank you so much for having me. I've been looking so much forward to having this chat with you. And yeah, the hagstones, it's really just a stone with a hole in it, to be honest. Unless you, of course, you might believe that there's more to it than that. I actually have one just here. You can see it's just a stone with a hole in it. And I guess it came about as I like to take walks on the beach, and I also like to keep myself busy. So you start looking at what you see around you, and you see holes with the stones in it. As you say, they have always, you know, been seen to have magical or mystical elements to them. And, you know, it might just be why we are in the good fortunes that we have here at Multiscription, because of the hagstones.
We're talking about good luck and having luck, being fortunate with the subscription model in games. And that seems to have really been taking the industry by surprise, because I was checking 7 of the top 10 grossing games. If you want to say they have some level of subscription, that's really the case. Because if you look even at Battle Pass, right? It's a lot like a subscription. So there's a lot going on driving this, Theis. Seems to have taken us by storm, though, a bit by surprise. Would you say so?
A Battle Pass is just a non-auto-renewable subscription. It has the same mechanics, and you can also just make a non-auto-renewable subscription. So you're completely right. And I think we're seeing the same transition that we saw back in 2012 when we moved from premium to free-to-play, where everyone was eyeing it, but no one really saw it take off as quickly as it did. And I think we see it here. The major difference we see is that subscription is a model that people are familiar with, at least as consumers. And then they might have an idea that they sort of understand how it works as a business, but it's quite different. It's not just, you know, stable revenue, as everyone talks about, but how to design it, how to use it, how to price it, how to match it with the other monetization methods that you have. That's the real challenge. And I think a lot of people are underestimating the kind of brain works that goes into that.
It's really interesting to get this very, very polarized opinion that, you know, subscription equals good, or subscription equals, oh dear God, it's going to kill the games industry. Again, the next thing that's going to kill the games industry, like mobile and free to play. So I'm delighted to have you here, Theis. What is it that you're seeing? And you know, what is it that your company is doing to really help studios understand and take advantage of this incredible new business model?
So we've essentially seen the rise of subscription even before Apple Arcade was even announced. And I remember when we were pitching to investors, my co-founder Martin Balfis and I were often being, you know, told, oh, so you're the Netflix for games. And we kept saying, no, because we're pretty sure that Netflix were going to include games. So we didn't want to be that. So we saw this coming, as you say, from outside of the industry. And we just saw a real need for it. We established the company, both Martin and I, we come from games, as you said, Peggy. Thank you very much for the kind introduction, by the way. But my co-founder, Martin, he founded Massive Entertainment 20-something years ago and has since then been in the industry. So we saw all these great games. We come from gaming that just didn't get the financial returns that I would say the great games deserved. And we saw subscription is a good way to help that because it really works nicely with how we are intrinsically motivated as people to engaged with a product. We actually like to be attached closely to a product, and a subscription does bring us closer to the product than a single purchase. I think to the point about, you know, the discussions that happen around subscription, they tend to be very binary and polarized, as you say, and I think also they are sometimes influenced by some people who might have tried it themselves and not made it work for various reasons. And then that becomes the conclusion for everyone, because then it's not just about them, I guess. So that could be another factor.
So Thijs, with that rapid integration of subscriptions into some of the top grossing games out there, how should gaming companies be approaching this model? You know, is it all part of this hybrid mix, or how do they maximize their revenue without, I guess, maybe overwhelming the users?
So the good thing about subscription is that it's actually very flexible. I think that's the main misunderstanding about a subscription. People have this idea that a subscription is a walled garden with an all-you-can-eat model where everything is unlocked. And this is the typical Apple Arcade setup where it's a walled garden. You have to pay to be able to play and everything is unlocked. That has sort of been how Apple Arcade has traditionally worked. But that's not how a subscription works at all. Subscription is just another tool in the toolbox you can add to complement your IAP, your ads, or whatever other methods you have in the game. And the good thing about it is you can actually use it to boost the other methods you have for monetization. But I think it has to start with a realization that you need to approach it from the angle that you need to learn it first. Just again, going back to, I mean, we probably had the same conferences back in 2011, 2012, when everyone was learning about free-to-play and going to the talks and how can I make money if I give away my game for free? This makes no sense. And then we had to learn about the mechanics and then everything took off back then. I think it's the same sort of beginner's mind that you have to apply to subscription as well. That's where, again, this is where we come in. We actually help a lot of companies with their subscription. Either we've actually helped some just with their own internal subscription, or they've been added to our subscription offer, which essentially links all the games into one subscription. So by being subscribed to one game, you get you're now a subscriber in all the 24 other games we currently have on the service.
I like that approach because what it is it's almost like a bit of a, it becomes a destination, particularly if the games have a lot in common. And we've had that on here, Brian. We had a while back, we had someone who was doing this only with learning games for children. And it was like, okay, if you want to have learning games for children, this is your destination. It's a subscription. It's a bundle. It's the power again of that bundle. And we've seen that works. You bring like things together and it's more than the sum of the parts. Is that what you're doing? You said you have 24 plus titles, I believe, Thijs. Is that the idea, to bring them together so it's a destination, not just a platform?
First of all, we actually approach it where we bring in a very diverse group of games because we see that working. I mean, Netflix was mentioned earlier, and the benefit of that is that it has something for everyone in the family, so everyone can sort of understand why we need to get the subscription. For us, it's primarily a value add for the games, that they can be bigger than they are by themselves. I think that's a challenge. I mean, Brian, you mentioned Spotify, and if you subscribe to Spotify, you have essentially all the music in the world, more or less. I know the aficionados will say no, but I mean, for 99% of people, it is all the music in the world you could want, even old music. So if you want to sell a subscription for games, it can be hard if it's just your game that you're asking for a subscription for. So being able to bundle it with other titles is just a nice, it's a nice thing for consumers. We all have a loss aversion, which is why we might not subscribe, because we think we might not continue to play the game. But if there are other games in the service, then the loss aversion goes away, because in your mind you're thinking, hey, I can always just play one of the other games if I stop playing this game. So that I think that's really the strength of putting it into a bigger network.
The value proposition for the player is that the barriers to trying new games, moving on to new games, are enormous. We've heard from so many people across the podcast in the last year that retention and engagement are just such key metrics for everybody. But once you have that subscription, once you've got people invested, not just financially, but with their time as well, it must have quite an impact on your retention. Are you seeing any kind of data on that would let you know this is a model that not only works, but that we can try in different ways?
I mean, subscription increases retention. This is a universal truth that not just we see, but everyone sees. Because I just think about it. Where do you go on a Saturday night if you want to watch a movie? Well, you don't go to where you haven't paid, right? You go to one of the services you're already paying for. You might be lured onto a new service if there's a new show coming. We all remember how Disney Plus used The Mandalorian to do that. But I mean, that's how it works. So subscription improves retention. But what I always talk about is seeing subscription in a game as building a relationship with the player. So you have to think about, as a player, when you commit to a subscription, you pay up front for the next, let's say, a month. You base that on faith on what the game is going to deliver. So you have to deliver that as a game. And not only that, you then over-deliver, build on the faith that the player will not cancel their subscription. So that way, a subscription is a lot like building a relationship. The more you put in, the more you get out. So you sort of stack it on top and you build your relationship with the player stronger and stronger over time by treating them as if they are essentially members of your game, you could say, using that kind of metaphor, that kind of thinking. And that separates a subscription a lot from just a one-off purchase where you get just the thing you need or the sack of coins, whatever you need. I think that's the key to really unlocking the understanding of how you go from a single transaction in premium to a series of transactions in free-to-play with microtransactions, and then into a relationship when you go into subscription.
The relationships that work are friction-free, frustration minimum, and there are hurdles when you're purchasing through off-platform payments. There are challenges. There are also benefits. What were some challenges and some advice for creating a user-friendly, a player-friendly payment experience?
That's a really, really good point you bring up there, Peg. And I think it's one that's being kind of overlooked a lot in the discussions that are currently about off-platform payments. Because every time you ask a player to take a step, there's not just a risk, but it's just a fact that not everyone will take that step. And for every step, especially if you go off-platform, the journey becomes longer and not everyone will complete the journey. And you'll be surprised how few that actually do, for whatever reason. So what you need to do is, of course, you need to remove all the friction you can in that journey to make it as smooth as possible. It's still going to be a journey, but as a user journey, but you make it as smooth as possible. And then you make the reward high for going through those steps. You make the pot of gold big. And I want to say, remember that the pot of gold should be big for the player who goes through the journey, not for the developer. And I think when we talk about these off-platform payments from developers, I often read, people talking about how much more money they could make if they didn't have to pay so much money to others. I say that saving goes to the player as a reward for taking that journey, at least the majority of it. Or it could also be that you could have some uniqueness to taking that journey, a reason for doing it. I would say that's the major step. So make it easy as possible. Give them a big reward for doing it, and even some uniqueness if you want to offer that for taking that extra step. It's really not for us at least, only a lot of people don't know this, but Apple and Google, they only charge 15% on subscriptions, not 30%. I educate a lot of people on that, especially, you know, the sales guys who want to sell me the off-platform payments. they are actually not aware. So for us, it's not really about the sort of little savings we could have. And I also think it speaks volumes to how sticky the model is, that Google and Apple, who are very strongly fighting for the right to take the 30%, they are forgoing 50% of that if you sell them a subscription. These guys, they know how strong subscription is. If they want to forgo, they probably still make more money by only taking 15 than taking 30 on an in-app purchase. So I think that's some of the things that people, it's been years since they changed this, but people still don't realize it actually.
Let's focus on multi-scription. So how do you look at the issues around things like subscription fatigue amongst players and consumers, especially in a market that, you know, is kind of not necessarily saturated, but there's a lot of people out there trying to get you to subscribe. So how are you addressing that, Thies?
First of all, we recognize it. I totally agree that there is subscription fatigue. I mean, my mom, she's 73 years old. She's been subscribed to the same physical newspaper for 50 years, actually more than that, 53 years now. Every day of the week, except Sunday, without any pause, without missing one payment, and she would never buy it on a Sunday, right? It's just Monday through Saturday for 53 years. We would never see this again. This is not what we expect. What we do expect is that people are, of course, looking at the offer, first of all. This is why we are consolidating, essentially, a lot of games that could have their own single game subscription into a bigger subscription, just to get away from there. Well, I have so many subscriptions. True. And now we are consolidating them into one, which also just gives us a lot of things to play around with in terms of rewarding the players and, you know, keeping them in that network of games. Secondly, it also gives you an opportunity to, when you do recognize that there is subscription fatigue, acknowledge it and don't make it difficult for people to leave. Actually, there's studies showing that the easier it is to leave, the more likely you are to be retained, because you don't feel trapped. You don't feel that you have to remember to sign out. I mean, everyone can try canceling their Adobe membership. That's the most difficult thing ever. This is why everyone wants to get out of Adobe. But if you have we have the unsubscribe button. It's right there on our app. You can't even actually unsubscribe from the app. You have to do it from the store, but we link you to the store. I mean, it's just to make it as easy as possible. We make it very, you know, bright and you can see it. Another thing is make it easy for people to come back. Don't punish them. Keep their profiles, keep their progress. Know that now they are playing your game for, let's say, a couple of months, and then they're off to the new thing. Now everyone's probably playing Fallout again. So let them play Fallout for a few months, and then they're going to come back to your game. And so make it easy for them to come back, reactivate the subscription, keep the progress, all these things. And I can say I have some data about this from others as well. I've talked to other subscriptions, and I know in streaming, I talked to a very big TV streaming platform, and they told me that they were signing up hundreds of thousands of viewers in the Nordics each month. And I was thinking, hundreds of thousands each month, there's only like 20 million people here. Like, how do you do that? And that's, of course, because they leave again very quickly. So they just see it as, you know, they're there for, let's say, a season of something, or let's say to watch the Champions League playoffs or whatever they're there for, and then they leave and then they come back. So don't slam the door after them. Don't be all passive aggressive in your communication to them when they leave. You know, I guess you weren't happy with what we had or something like that. Make it, you know, they're going to come back. And you know, people fall on hard times sometimes. They would want to pay, but they just can't afford those. Even the $5, right? I mean, starting a game company in Europe, and I would say particularly I'm in Copenhagen here, you kind of forget your privilege that not everyone can just have a lot of subscription, $5 subscription running, and it's no problem. So treat people with respect, I would say.
So Thies, We can agree that subscriptions are huge. We can see the giants like Netflix and Apple modifying their subscription models to introduce more monetization elements, you know, so in-app purchases alongside the subscriptions itself. So as more gaming companies consider moving to that subscription model, what considerations should they keep in mind to ensure that smooth transition, profitable growth, but just as importantly, that relationship with their players?
I think we touched upon a few of the points already about thinking about it as a relationship you're establishing with a player. You should also think about that you are offering players another way to pay for your product. You're not trying to milk them for more money. That's the wrong approach. You should also understand it, as I said before, you know, you're just adding another tool. And you have to make sure that works alongside ads and in-app purchases. One of the surprising things is that typically if you have rewarded video ads, you would have diminishing returns for the player by watching ads. So we have a couple of things when we work with games. If you integrate our subscription model, which by the way is called Unleashed, so the company is multi-subscription, the model is called Unleashed, then you're not allowed to have any interstitials or banners or blocking ads, but you're still allowed to have rewarded video ads if they are voluntary and player initiated. Okay, so there has to be voluntary and they has to be initiated by the player. So this could be like going to a menu, get some more coins by watching an ad. And because what we see, the reason why we have this, that's something I learned when we started out the company, we said no ads at all. But then we were talking to publishers, we were reading tons of reviews of games, and people were complaining about publishers taking away rewarded video ads. There was one, and I screenshot it, because one person was complaining saying, you took away my free stuff. Like, they didn't see it as paying with their eyeballs. They saw it as, here's some free stuff for me that I could get by watching an ad. Again, if it's voluntary and player initiated. So anyway, so we say keep those, because players actually like them if they're done in that way. Also, because you're a subscriber, give them a bonus. Give them 20% more rewards for watching this ad. And so that's already, okay, now I have the rewarded ads also for subscribers, and I'm giving them an extra reward for watching it. So you're already treating them better. Another way you can go about that is you can just say, okay, you still have to click it. You don't have to get the watch the ad, you just get the benefit, but you still have to go and click it. That's another way of doing it. But I think you can still justify the ad. But the last point on that, going back to the relationship, is that where you normally have diminishing returns, as I said, on watching a rewarded video ad, it should be the other way around, because we're building on the relationship, right? So the more you put in, the more you get out. So you actually turn it around. So instead of getting 500 coins, 400 coins, 300 coins, whatever, you build it the other way, that you get more and more and more the more time you engage with the product. It's sort of having that kind of switch mentally in how you engage with people is critical. And then do your calculations and understand that you have to, that it's not a quick fix. Just like making a game free and putting in some golden sword is going to make you a millionaire. Then I think that's the kind of considerations you need to have going into it.
When I'm at events and I'm talking about this with developers, with marketers, they're like, oh yeah, this is great, we'll just do it. Like you just said, you know, you don't just do it. And I think we need to have some tough love here, right? It's not a model for everyone. Is there something like a list, a checklist, what studios should be asking themselves? You know, am I subscription ready? Am I ready to engage with multi-subscription? Am I ready to be using Unleashed? Because it's not a decision that you just make. I don't know if it's like the other monetization models where you have to design it in and build it in ahead of time as well. So why don't you share your learnings, Thijs? You've seen it as a games company and also as the CEO of your company.
Yeah, I can actually start by addressing the last point about you have to build it in from the beginning, because that's almost like a checklist of things you don't need to. And actually with subscription, you don't need to build it in from the beginning, because a lot of the things you've already built in, you can just reuse in a subscription, and it's kind of easy to add on, even if you made a premium game. I can come back to that later on when we go through the checklist. Also, just another point that you don't need to think about is actually your A lot of people we talk to say, we're not really sure about subscription because we only have like 2-3% day 30 retention. So it's not a lot. But I'm saying, well, you can still sell to 100% of those players potentially if you can provide them real value, because these guys are really into your game. So you don't have to look at the retention numbers to think about if you can have a subscription. It doesn't have to be that. And as you were saying, Brian, people are shopping anyway, so you don't have to ask them to stay around for 12 months. What you also shouldn't do is you shouldn't the typical average revenue per paying user calculation or LTV. You say, how much do we make? And then we price the subscription at that. That's going to fail. If you say, so our LTV is $15, let's make a $15 subscription and we'll be fine. That's what we've seen. So a lot of people do. So don't do that. But to your question about actually a checklist, the first thing you need to have is you need to have things in the game for the players that they can buy that provides persistent value. So something that is not just a one-off thing that doesn't give you any value going forward. So let's say a bag of coins or a bag of diamonds, whatever, that's a typical quick consumable with no persistent value. But let's say the obvious one is the battle pass or the season pass. That's something that gives you value for as long as you have it. So that's a good candidate. But you could also think about, let's say subscribers get 20% extra XP. They get better drops, they get better rewards, they get access to features, access to levels. These are all things that you have that gives you a benefit while you are subscribed. And very importantly, it goes away again when you don't subscribe. Which brings me to, don't choose like a unique item to give a subscriber. You can give a small one as a welcome bonus, but that shouldn't be the subscription, because what happens when they do cancel? Because again, to your point, Brian, they will. Do you take away the sword again or the special boots, or do you let them keep them? How does that work? So another thing you could put just under the persistent value checklist is, for example, removing ads. Like I talked about, do that. That's a persistent value, not having to watch ads. I mean, if you watch cable TV, you would love to have that option. and then I would also say put on the checklist that you have in-app purchase so you can upsell. This is a strong, strong, strong driver for subscription. We haven't really touched upon it, so I'll just quickly elaborate on it here, is that subscription also drives upsell. And actually, people start spending more after they become subscribers. If you think about Amazon Prime, they have seen this. People start spending more on Amazon after they become Prime members to get the free shipping. It's not the other way around. People think that the big spenders on Amazon, they become Prime members. No, no. Once you get your Prime membership, you want to spend something so you get your free shipping. You're saving money every time you buy, right? That's kind of logic. I think it's Ubisoft have spoken about seeing this as well. I think it's Ubisoft that they've spoken about it. And if you think about it psychologically, it makes sense. If you have a $5 subscription like our subscription and you get discounts on in-app purchase, you're going to be spending on in-app purchases until you saved $5, because then your subscription was essentially free. That's the logic that we have as people. And so have that, because I think if you put in most of the games, again, I would say we talk to so many different types of games, from kids games, hyper casual games, strategy games, match three games. So it's very different from game to game, right? But for any game is, if you don't have anything of value to sell, if you don't have anything that means they should come in every day, you can't have a subscription model in the game. So that's the persistent value. And the other thing you need to check is actually on your process and organization side. Do you have a setup to have ongoing communication and dialogue with the players and react on it? I know everyone's talking about live ops, but here I think a lot of people mostly think about just looking at graphs going up and down and data and then tweaking the bit, 0.2%, and then see the graph go up. That's not what it is, because again, you're entering into a relationship. Think about it. Your relationship with something you're subscribed to compared to something that you just buy from once is completely different. And you should expect that people will contact you. You should make it easy for them to contact you. We have several ways for people to contact us. And I can tell you, if you don't give them a simple way, they will just contact you through the reviews section on the App Store, and you don't want that. You want them to write to you, right? And do you have a process for dealing with it? Do you have a process for taking action on the things they say? Do you have a way of treating them nicely? I mean, we have a principle in the company where we are overcompensating people. Like if they write in with an issue, we always answer immediately, and we are overcompensating even if the issue is really on their side. We're always helping them. You should always automatically give people their money back if they claim that whoever it wasn't them, it was the child buying it. Don't argue. Money back. All that kind of stuff. Just do that. Even if you feel like, well, this is the second time you're telling this, you know, maybe a password would be good. Don't argue. Just give it back. So have that kind of, are you interested in having that kind of relationship with your player? Are you actually interested in that? Otherwise, I don't think subscription is for you. If you just want to have like a one-off payment, like, and I'm also talking about an integrated subscription. You can also, if you have a traditional premium game, go to Apple, go to Netflix, go to Google, get them to include the game in their great service. I mean, I have nothing bad to say about these services. They have wonderful games, all of them. So you can take your game there. I keep calling it a bit of a teasing way. I keep calling Apple Arcade the lifeboat for premium games. It's not exactly true, but it was at some point. And I think it's great. I mean, I'm an Apple Arcade subscriber myself, so I really enjoy the games there. So as you mentioned, Peg, it's not for everyone. It's not for everyone. I mean, I can tell you one group it's very difficult for, and that's hyper-casual. It's very difficult for hyper-casual to have a single game subscription. They can make it very short, which would fit the time you play the game. But it's still challenging just because they don't have much to offer. I think hybrid casual is where you're adding in a purchase for things you can buy. But if you just have the no ads, it can be a hard sell. What you could do is you can bundle like we're offering with hyper casual. And the way our system works, actually, we haven't really talked about the free trials, but what we are doing is we have a free trial that's set not on the subscription centrally, but per game. And it's down, you can set the trial to be just 1 minute. So just so you can try to play one level in a hyper-casual game without an ad. And you can set it as low as 1 minute. As a developer, you can set it up to a month. So depending on what your game is. And we have some ways in, you know, the whole how we share the revenue that's linked to that. But just that's another consideration. And we help with this. When you contact us, we help with this. So I said you need to talk to an expert. There's not many experts out there because our competitors, Apple, Google, Netflix, when was the last time you heard them share their knowledge at a conference, right? So I'm always happy to share. I'm so happy to be here to share with you guys, actually. I'm really enjoying the conversation here.
I knew it when I brought you in, Tyce. I was like, this is going to be good. I said tough love. We've got tough love. We've got great advice. There's a lot to digest there. But also a lot of common sense. I mean, it makes a ton of sense that we just want to get our money's worth out of our subscription. So actually cross-sell, upsell, all of those opportunities are there if you build it in right. So that's actually very good news. It's about not necessarily thinking about how's the game going to fit, but how do I architect it and how do I support it? I mean, as a follow-up, I just have to ask, and maybe just a quick question, but that's just it. You need to be able to have the processes in place to say, I'm going to be listening to my players. I'm going to be responding to them. I'm just thinking out loud, is that the community manager? Is this just having some chat bot? I mean, what is that? Because that is so central that I think our audience, before they even consider this, has to have that process in place.
I think getting, again, the relationship that there's a human that understands you, that listens to your needs. And to be honest, you don't get that many complaints or requests. And I mean, you can, it's manageable, right? So rather do that and have that conversation or find someone who wants to have that. I think we all know we love game developers, obviously, but they're not always the type of people who wants to have a, you know, face-to-face dialogue or on the phone dialogue with the players. So work with someone who enjoys that. It could be a community manager. I think community management sometimes again, from company to company, becomes more of a sort of managing expectations with the community and dealing with, you know, the complaints. And I'm not sure that's the right approach. I think of it more as someone who works in a reception at a hotel. You know, you call, you have a problem, and they fix your problem. That's more the kind of mentality you would need with this.
You've hit the nail on the head. It has to be an informed decision. This isn't for everyone. It's not something that every developer is going to want to do. And that long-term relationship, the whole live ops community management, and building that engagement over, you know, months, hopefully years. You know, we've seen it with some games that are out there now that have been on the app stores for literally decades, which is incredible. But again, it has to be part of your design and development decision. So not just something that you fall into, and not something that, as you said earlier, that is necessarily built in from the ground up, but it's something that as a business, as a studio, you can make a decision going, okay, we want to get into this, but we're going to have to build all of those resources and capabilities to allow us to take advantage of that. It's not just, you know, sales are starting to peak, let's slap a subscription on and hope for the best.
And I will say that I think a lot of the pushback sometimes comes in the media, because I'm obviously reading your news as well. So I think a lot of people are waking up, especially those, if you have a publisher who was traditionally publishing premium mobile games that now go to Apple or Netflix, you start asking yourself, hey, why do people need me? Like, if they can just, if Apple can go and talk to them directly. Also, I'm also teasing always these publishers that who have their games on Apple and complain about the revenue share there, is that, well, now you just know what it is to have a publisher. You know, you're on the other end of the deal now. That's how it feels, right? So that's, I'm saying this a bit teasingly, but I think there is some truth to that. And I think, again, these publishers, they're very good at game scouting. They're very good at user acquisition, doing the PR, getting the pre-rendered videos done. But are they good at having an ongoing dialogue with players? Are they good at upsell? I think publishers are really bad at upsell in general. Very little crossover between the games. All these things, I just think they're not equipped for that. And that's why they sometimes come out with a worse deal than they normally have. And then that sort of gets blamed on the business model and not on their setup. So I think a lot of them will change over time to start thinking about, they're not just, you know, putting the games on stores anymore. They also take another responsibility in this setup.
I think there's an awful lot across this whole conversation for studios out there to unpack and kind of look at in a different light. But so looking at the gaming companies and genres you've worked with, can you open our eyes to the possibilities? How far can studios stretch this model? Or is there an example of a game that made this model work that surprised even you?
There's, again, when we work with companies, we are not their bosses. We don't decide what to do. And we can see that the reward is very much linked to how much work they put in and how much they promote the offer. That's very, very clear. I think another thing that is critical in this is not just promoting the offer, but promoting the benefits. I think people, again, come from a world of single sales or a series of sales. You don't have to remind people of the bag of coins they bought 2 weeks ago, but you have to remind people of the benefits they get in the ongoing subscription. And I've even worked in a company where we had benefits for subscribers that we didn't tell them. It was just hidden in the back end, and actually we had the VIP support, so when they would contact us, they would get a top. All these things we didn't tell them. And it's just like, now you're not giving them the value. So I think that's the first. In terms of the specifics, I can't share it here because it would essentially be sharing our partner's data, which I'm very clear not doing. But if someone is interested, they can definitely contact us and we can have a specific talk about the game and talk about that. But there is actually one thing that surprised me, because we're talking about in-game subscriptions here. And when Martin and I started the company way back, we were only focused on free-to-play, because that's where an in-game obviously works. You download the game and you have an in-game subscription that you access and you get presented with when you are in the game. And we were leaving, as I said, the premium games to Apple and and Netflix and those guys. But that's one thing that surprised me, how well premium games can adapt to an in-game subscription. And not many people think of this. A very easy way to do this is to, in order to not split your downloads, take your premium game that's currently on the store, make it free to download. That's a two-minute change, so that takes no time. And then you build a paywall, and that paywall should have at least two doors. It should have a door that says unlock rest of the game for X amount, whatever it is. Could be $5, $10, could be two, doesn't matter. It should have that door. And that you keep it the price that was before. And then the other door is, or play for free as long as you have a subscription. Okay, you play as much as you want as long as you have a subscription. So now players can choose between still buying the game, which some people prefer, or have a subscription that some people prefer. And actually, some people, for when it comes to premium games, they don't mind overpaying games a bit because they like to support their creators, so they're not that price sensitive. So those two doors you can have. And then we have seen games in our service that have a third door, which is watch an ad to continue. And this can come up every, let's say, every in-game day, or it could be every level. You have this paywall, pay to unlock game and never get the pop-up again. Watch an ad to continue for a level or an in-game day or whatever, or be a subscriber and get all these benefits as well. Typically, they don't have in-app purchase, but they just have the access. And that in-game subscription for premium games was actually something that's surprised me, and something that we've only come to realize now that it's opening up a whole new world for us. It doesn't just have to be free to play.
We have to explore that. We have to just explore the models themselves. And also, because we're running out of time, we can't do it all, but also, you know, how to adapt the model to the different player segments, their demographics. I mean, it's all about, people talk about personalizing the paywall ties. So what's exciting here is you're talking about almost building the model to be nearly as individual as the player as well, which is even cooler, actually, than just putting in some personalization.
It is super interesting. And I would say, you don't need a lot of data. You can start by just talking to your players. And that's a good start if you want to have a subscription anyways. Not being afraid, reaching out, setting up a chat. They are happy to provide their ideas and feedback. Understand what it is they want. And understand, as someone who's been working in games, has worked with even with indie games, people actually want to pay for your game. Monetization is not a bad thing. It's not something you're not tricking people into giving you money. People, think about it, of all the things you enjoy in your life, you get pleasure out of buying them, paying for them, and you're happy to do so. And think about it that way, and that will happen when you provide real value to your players. They would be super happy, very excited. I see my son at 11 every time there's a new battle pass in Fortnite. He's excited about spending his money there because they give him something that he's super excited about. I'm paying, you know, heating bills. That's not exciting. I'm not happy. But I like, you know, buying battle passes in games. I like buying in-app purchase. I like buying premium games, right? So think about it. Monetization is not a bad thing. People like to give you their money because they like your product.
While we get into the depths and the business models and, you know, all the ways games are changing, let's bring it back to the actual fun part of this. So we have two questions for every guest. One is, what game are you playing right now? What's kind of obsessing you? What's taking up your time? And the second one is, what's your favorite game of all time?
The one I'm playing right now is a game called MMA Manager by a Swedish company called Prey Studios. Very overlooked title. It's a manager sim for MMA fighters. You have your little gym. I love that game. And I would say my all-time greatest, that was a tough one. I've been thinking so much. But I think, thinking back, I think actually I'm going to pick XCOM Apocalypse, one of the games from the XCOM genre, a few years old. But I just think that game, what it had with the sort of fake 3D, the base building. I mean, and you were scared of these, you know, the face huggers, and like you were genuinely scared about what, and you cared for your guys. Never saw that in a game before. And obviously the XCOM series now is brilliant. I think it's the most obvious game for a tablet. I'm so happy they brought XCOM to tablets. I love playing it then, you know, on my iPad. So I think that game is just one that I think really stood out to me as as probably my favorite. But then again, ask me again in a few days, it might be something else.
I said we were lucky at the start. I'll end it. I'll say we were lucky to have you, Thijs. Thanks so much.
Thank you so much for having me.
This show is all about how to do your job better, how to make an amazing game, how to market it. And you have a say. So if you have a story or know someone we need to shine a light on, then we would love to hear from you.
We want to hear from you. We want to reflect the reality of the mobile games market in all its wonderful complexity and strangeness. So if you have any suggestions for us, if you have any feedback for us, you can always get in touch. You can email us at podcast@pocketgamer.biz. You can find us on Twitter at PGBiz, and you can reach out to us through the pocketgamer.biz website. If you're interested in listening to all of our podcasts, you can find them at pocketgamer.biz/podcast. And we would love to hear your thoughts on future shows.
And we've got you covered on all the major platforms. So subscribe to the audio podcast, as Brian said. Look for us on YouTube. If you want to read it, hey, you can do that too, because we have a companion post for you as well on the pocketgamer.biz website.
Tune in again for the next edition of the pocketgamer.biz podcast, and we look forward to speaking to you in the near future.